A steelworkers labor union has struck a deal with Harley-Davidson in Wisconsin. We're talking about it on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. United Steelworkers took a vote yesterday, and they approved an agreement that covers workers at sites in the Milwaukee area and Tomahawk. The deal includes a 14% raise for workers over the next 5 years. We want to hear from you on this. Do you work in manufacturing? How has the work changed over time? And what role do unions still have in your factory, in your plant? What do you think this negotiation means for other unions? We're at 800-642-1234. John Shelton is an associate professor of democracy and justice studies at the UW-Green Bay. He studies unions, labor, and education. John, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me. Good morning, Kate.
How significant is this new contract for people who work for Harley?
Well, I think it's significant. As you mentioned, there's a 14% pay increase. Although I would point out to your listeners that that's over 5 years, so that's hardly an extravagant pay increase, given that the cost of living goes up. But I think for the two locals that were engaged in the negotiations, one of the big deals, or the sort of biggest point of contention, was a two-tiered workforce that sort of had emerged, right? So the company was hiring a larger percentage of temporary workers. I think both plants had less full-time employees now than they did 10 years ago, and the company was basically replacing a lot of them with temp workers, some of whom had, you know, been on the job for, you know, up to a couple of years, I think, from what I read about the negotiations. So that seemed to be the biggest sticking point. And the last time we talked a couple weeks ago, it looked like there was a kind of stalemate around that. And, you know, it looks like this new contract has some additional provisions to protect full-time workers and hopefully, I think from the union's perspective, give a path to full-time employment for some of those temp workers. I haven't seen the full contract, so mm-hmm. I'd be interested to know sort of what exactly that looks like. But I do know that the unions are definitely claiming it as a win that they were able to get some of those provisions in the contract.
Union leaders are also concerned about work moving out of state, out of the plants. Is that something unions have the power to negotiate, or is it part of a larger economic trend?
Sure. So I mean, you know, that's been the story in the United States, you know, especially in, you know, what people outside of the Midwest, you know, sometimes refer to as the Rust Belt. That's been the trend now for 30 or 40 years, companies moving elsewhere for cheaper labor costs, right? So there's only, you know, a certain extent to which companies can, or, you know, workers can control that. It seems like in the case of Harley-Davidson, and I would compare them a little bit to Kohler, the plumbing fixtures company in Sheboygan, the kind of rootedness in Wisconsin gives the union a bit additional, you know, kind of leverage. There seems to be a commitment to Wisconsin that you know, other companies in the past may not have, you know, felt as deeply. So I do think that, you know, it is possible for unions to do something about that. But as you intimated, certainly a lot of it is outside of their control. And that's one of the reasons we've seen such downward pressure on good blue-collar jobs over the past 30 or 40 years.
And, John, wages often get the headlines. They get the top billing in the negotiations. But what about the retirement piece of this deal? What should we know there?
Yeah, so I think one of the big trends in a lot of, again, blue-collar manufacturing has been unions sort of giving up concessions in order to save their jobs. And in this case, there were no concessions on either retirement or health care. So that I think might signify, you know, that workers in the contemporary United States are experiencing a little bit of a increase in negotiating power. And, you know, I attribute that to a couple of things. One of those things is that even though I don't think our unemployment measure, you know, fully captures you know, just how tight the labor market is. In other words, we have unemployment that's below 4%, but it actually, if you look at the workforce participation rate, we're still not actually sort of where we were before the economic crisis of 2008. But it is the case that labor markets are tighter than they were a couple years ago. And I would also point out to your listeners that 2018 featured the largest number of strikes, of workers on strike in American history since the mid-1980s, since 1986, I think.
Wow.
So I think that's given unions across the country a little bit extra sort of negotiating power, right? So like, you know, you have an economy that's doing relatively well. And so, you know, Harley certainly doesn't want to shut down production. You certainly can't move production very rapidly. And so I think in this case that gave the, you sort of combine those factors and that gives the workers, gave the workers at you know, those two plants maybe a bit more negotiating power than workers had, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Talking with John Shelton, an associate professor of democracy and justice studies at UW Green Bay, and talking about the deal that was struck yesterday between United Steel workers and Harley-Davidson. John, the contract that United Steel workers originally had had expired at the start of this month. Is it typical that negotiators, they need extensions, or do most unions and companies find room to agree on deadline?
That's a good question. You know, I've never really thought about that systematically. It's not uncommon to find extensions, particularly when, you know, both sides are really close. And so, you know, hammering out some additional details are certainly not worth a labor stoppage or a lockout. So I wouldn't say it's the norm to have the deadline for negotiations extended, but there's certainly precedent for it. It's not an uncommon thing at all.
And the contract that we're talking about here applies to about 1,000 workers. How did Harley-Davidson fare in this deal?
Well, I mean, again, you know, I would this often what happens with, you know, union contracts is you hear the sort of basic parameters of it. And that's kind of where we are now, sort of right immediately after the agreement is reached. And then it's really in the kind of weeks that follow that you actually get a look at the full contract. You know, I think so all that's to say, I'd like to look, you know, more closely
sure.
at the sort of details of the contract. But, you know, I think I know Harley's been under some pressure. Some of your listeners probably know that trade policies, recent trade policies by the Trump administration, at least Harley has argued that those trade policies have impacted their ability to be internationally competitive. And I know that they were looking to potentially even explore the idea of new plants elsewhere. So, you know, I think that's a concern on their end. But, you know, my guess, if most corporations in this country have been doing quite well in the past 10 years, so I don't know exactly what Harley's profits have been, but, you know, my guess is that, you know, they're you know, still pretty profitable. And so it's definitely in their interest, particularly in this, you know, labor market, as I was kind of talking about, to not shut down production and to have the kind of stability that comes from a 5-year contract. So, you know, my guess is they did pretty well.
As we start to wrap up here, what does this agreement reveal, if anything, about the state of private sector unions in Wisconsin?
Oh, that's a great question. So I think the last time I was here, I talked about how private sector union membership in this country is, you know, down below 7%. In Wisconsin, it's a bit higher, but it's definitely under 10%. And, you know, so I think it's quite possible that this signifies, you know, a resurgence of, you know, this isn't like a revolutionary thing, I don't think. But, you know, as I was saying before, I think the militants that we're seeing from all quarters of labor in this country, you know, signifies that there is a kind of rising level of bargaining power for workers now.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Always a pleasure.
John Shelton is an associate professor of democracy and justice studies at UW Green Bay. He studies unions, labor, and education. And we've been talking about how the United Steelworkers agreed to a new contract with Harley-Davidson yesterday. Coming up, we look at what environmental justice means for tribal communities. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.